Good morning and welcome to chapel. And I hope you gathered from the upbeat music that you heard coming in today that we are really excited about the chance to be here and to share stories this morning. My name is Carmen Schrock-Hurst. For those of you that don't know me, I teach in the Bible and Religion Department, and I direct something called the Ministry Inquiry Program. In typical EMU lingo, that gets called an acronym, which is MIP. Most of you know that you learn best by doing things, not just by sitting in a room reading about them, but by doing. And the MIP program is an experiential learning program where for 11 weeks you're matched full-time with a congregation anywhere in the country and get to be mentored by a seasoned pastor or pastoral team as you explore your own gifts in ministry and interest. Today we're going to get to hear from two of this past summer's MIPers. We did have four of them. Some of you might know some of our MIP alums who are currently on campus, Hannah Heishman and Rachel Schrock, and also Chris Parks, our alums. So if you see them around and want to ask for some of their stories, I encourage you to do that. First of all, before stories, I just want to share a quote from Henry Nouwen. My students will tell you I like to quote Henry Nouwen, the late Catholic priest. And one of the things he said was, "The beginning and the end of all Christian leadership is to give your life for others." And I think that's at the heart of the MIP program, that students sign up not knowing what's going to happen, some ups, some downs, but in the midst of it all, they're giving their life for other people, and from that, they're learning a great deal. So this morning, it's my privilege to introduce Daniel Barnhart. Daniel is a senior Bible and Religion major from Grottoes, Virginia. He served this past summer with his home congregation, Mount Olive Brethren Church in McGackiesville, Virginia. And we'll also hear from Wesley Wilder, who's a senior psychology major from Heston, Kansas. And Wesley served his summer with Journey Mennonite Church in South Hutchinson, Kansas. We'll hear them share in that order, and then I'll make a few clarifying and closing comments about how MIP works and how you might be involved. Daniel?
It's a pleasure to be with you guys today. I'm just so excited for this opportunity because I hope my story and Wesley's story is an opportunity that anybody can do this and make you realize that you don't have to be perfect to be in the ministry. You just have to be open for God to use you. And there will be ups and downs, but God will bless you through that. When I served at my other brother church, I grew up in that church my whole life, and it was basically 150 people, and, you know, it was different being in the church, because finally I got to see the inside. There were some parts I didn't like about the inside, but, you know, every church has its problems, but that's not what it's about. It's about figuring what you can do for the community, and I'll never forget the opportunities and the experiences that changed my life. I got way more from the MIP program than I gave myself. I taught a Bible school. I went to hospitals. I was able to, you know, talk to kids about God at church camp. And I really like going to the hospitals because after a week of staff meetings, I realized that staff meetings really wasn't my thing, and that's okay. Some people have the gifts, but that is definitely not me. I'm more of the guy on the ground, and I would like to do the work. And I just met amazing people at the hospitals. One of the ones I can remember is my buddy Kevin Bragg. About a couple years ago, he got diagnosed with aneurysms that were basically incurable. And 10 years ago, the doctor said he couldn't live, and he basically kept defying that, and he like defied it his whole life, and you know, he was attached to me, and I was able to call him up on the phone today, and I was like, "Kevin, how are you still alive, and how are you praising Jesus?" And he was like, "Daniel, I take every day as a blessing because I don't know what the next time I'm going to have." And that was like so inspiring to me because this guy is dying and he has such uplifted parents. And then there was another guy I met in the hospital. His name was Jack. And Jack had got out of the church for a while, and he went to the Judaism faith because his wife was a Jew, and it was like the all-American love story. He met her, and he fell in love, and they had a wonderful life together. And all of a sudden, his wife Judy got sick, and she went to a prayer meeting, and she asked the preacher to heal her, so he healed her. I don't know what he healed her of, but ever since then, she followed Jesus. And then, when I was there, she had a lot of stomach problems and ulcers and stuff, and she had to be flown to UVA. And I just saw Jack every moment being on her bedside, and that was like so inspired. And he was always so positive and optimistic and thankful for me coming to the hospital and being for him, there for him. But this one day, he was crying, and I was like, Jack, are you okay? And he was like, Daniel, I don't know how I'm gonna get through this. I'm feeling kind of rough. I'm seeing my wife. She's gonna be at the phone to UVA, and I just seen her go through 10 surgeries, and I don't know what to do in that moment. So I did the only thing I can do. I tried to distract him, so I was able to ask him about the time they fell in love, and he told me their whole life story and how they had wonderful kids, and that was able to distract him for the day. And then I was able to pray for him. I didn't think the prayer was really good, but thank God, God is better than anything we could say. So he was so appreciative that I said the prayer, and he actually came back to church that day and said how wonderful his prayer was. But in the midst of all this stuff, I had doubt, but there was always people in my life that were teaching me that, you know, Jesus is always going to be there for me in the ups and downs. There was one time I was at the men's group lunch, and this guy heard of my album on the internet. I don't know how he did, but he came in. He was on a faith journey, and he was like, Daniel, do you really believe? Because his heart was telling him that I didn't really believe, and he started quoting all these Bible verses to me, and I didn't really realize why he was quoting, and I felt awkward. But he was right. I didn't really believe as much as I should have. And just, you know, he was there for me when I needed him the most. And this was a total stranger. Like, when God analyzes your heart, you're like, why do you have to analyze my heart, God? But, like I said, God was always there, even on the ups and downs. And also, one of my favorite movie memories is when I taught Bible school with my mother, and these kids didn't know Jesus, and like they got bullied at school, and they said people called them names, the N-word, all these words that they couldn't imagine, and you know, I just wanted to cry because, like, these were young kids and they were getting bullied. Like, I seen a lot in this world, but I never saw kids getting bullied before. And I just got really emotional. And then, like, through the Bible school, we were able to bring some kids through Christ. And they were able to actually get baptized. So just to see that was an awesome story. And there was this one kid named Liam. He didn't really have many friends, and I didn't know what his story was. And he was always the odd one out because he liked the different things, and he liked hard stories, and he just didn't seem able to connect with the other kids. and he went home and told his mom how I talked to him and was friendly to him. And I found out through his mom that I actually knew his brother. And his brother was a good kid, but he did some hard times, so he went to jail. And, like, he was always touched because he remembered me from grade school. So it's like I was able to touch two different generations of people. And just, like, the fact I couldn't do that alone, God could do that. And I believe if you guys sign up for the MIP program, God can do so much more with you all. And I believe this kingdom needs you. And the enemy tried to lie to you and tell you you're not good enough, or even the small things. Like, why didn't you bring 1,000 people? The enemy tried to tell you that you're not good enough, but God can use you even in the small things. So thank you so much for your time. And here's my pal Wesley.
Thanks for the introduction.
Thanks for the introduction, Daniel.
You're welcome. Now take us home, man.
My MIP journey actually started when I decided to transfer here from Heston. I knew immediately when I transferred here that I was going to take part in the MIP program this summer. And I remember sitting in this chapel last year and sitting and watching my friends Nathaniel Ressler and Hannah Heishman tell their stories and hear about their experiences, and had no idea what my experience was going to look like. I hadn't set anything up. I didn't have a placement set up. Carmen and I had just started having conversations about where I was going to start, and my mind just kept going and imagining what this experience could be. And I sort of view this chapel as like a preview to see what an MIP experience can be. And so in preparation for this chapel, I've been watching Honest Trailers on YouTube. I don't know how many people are familiar with that. So it's taking the trailer from a movie before you've seen it and then watching it and then talking about what the movie actually is rather than what it's promoted as. So I'm going to do my best to promote a honest trailer of my MIP experience. So first I need to start with the bare bones of my experience. So my experience started at Journey Mennonite Church, which is a church of about 500 people in South Hutchinson, Kansas, that has two other sister churches in other local communities. And I was working primarily with the youth group there, which is about 50 students, give or take, on an average night. And so my requirements as I knew them were going into it were I had to be there for 11 weeks, I had to work there full time, I had to preach a sermon, and I had to live with a host family. But what this preview doesn't tell you is that during this 11 weeks, your focus is going to change drastically from week to week. In specific weeks, I spent a week at convention with the youth. I spent a week with the kids in the church doing vacation Bible school. I spent a week doing visitation. I spent a week planning my sermon. I spent a week planning curriculum for the kids, or for the youth. I spent a week planning events for the youth up through December, and I spent a week working on budget and church planning stuff. And then my other 3 weeks, they gave me some variety so the job didn't get boring. And the preview also doesn't tell you that full-time really means 60 hours a week sometimes. Full-time really means that you sometimes spend a lock-in in a cold gym with a group of about 15 junior high and high schoolers doing a fasting event, a prayer, and a educational event around sex trafficking. Full-time doesn't tell you that you are going to spend countless hours after youth group functions just sitting and talking to kids because they've got nothing better to do on a Sunday night than talk to their youth pastors. Full-time also means that sometimes you have to stay until 9:30 in the evening for budget meetings. But really what they don't tell you when they mean full-time is that full-time just means being present, able, and willing to step in wherever you're called for that time during the week. They also didn't tell me exactly what would go into the sermon that I was to preach. Carmen never told me that my sermon, one sermon that I was supposed to preach, actually turned into three at the 8 a.m. service, the 9:30 service, and the 11 o'clock service. Carmen also failed to warn me about the sleepless night that happens before a sermon. Going to bed at 11 and rolling around in bed for 4 hours before you wake up, before you get 2 hours of sleep, wake up at 5:30, drive to the church, and practice at the pulpit for a little bit, and then spend the next 2 hours before the service just nervously pacing around the church because you have no idea how people are going to receive your message. Carmen also didn't warn me of the feeling of relief when I finished my sermon and the 7-hour nap that followed as soon as I got home. But I think the most important thing that Carmen could have told me is the experience that preaching a sermon to 500 people and having every person in that sanctuary come out and shake your hand and tell you you did a nice job and thank you and say other, just say all kinds of nice things about you. So, Carmen, maybe you should put that in the materials this year. I also had to figure out this whole host family thing all by myself. I wasn't told that my host family would be happy to sit and talk with me at the dinner table until after the food was cold. I wasn't told that my host family would check in with my parents when they when they run into each other and check in and see how I'm doing. I also wasn't told that when my host family goes on vacation, my job is to be homeowner, basically, and do all the chores and take care of the house. But there are also parts of this job that nobody can predict. For example, nobody could have predicted that the youth group had a Princess Bride obsession and would insist on calling me Farm Boy. Nobody would have predicted that I would be doing ministry work for ages 2 and up to 95. I did not expect to have to play dress-up of various Bible characters on a nightly basis for vacation Bible school. I also didn't anticipate that a 2-year-old would confuse me for God when I was wearing that outfit. Nobody could have predicted the relationships that I would build with staff, students, and other congregants. And I did not expect to have to plan to play games with a child in a wheelchair. I certainly did not expect to have one of the youth run, leap off the stage, and jump into my arms just seconds before the last worship service before I left. And I certainly did not expect to get such a clear direction as to the next steps my life would be. Like many seniors, I have been asked repeatedly what my next year holds, where I want to work, where I'm going to school, and my answer is always the same. I don't know, Dad, stop asking me. But this experience has given me clarity in what I want to do. Being a psychology and Bible major, there are some ways in which these two seemingly disconnected degrees connect very well. And having this experience with youth and being in their world and seeing them interact with each other and taking a part in their growth has taught me just how important it is for me to continue in this type of work. And so, I'm combining my psychology and my Bible and religion, and all my experiences have kind of brought me to this point of figuring out what my purpose is. And my purpose, as I see it right now, as this experience made evidently clear, is that I want to be a school counselor. And so, since then, I have applied at a school counseling program, and I'm anxiously waiting to hear whether or not I've been accepted. And so, I want to just close by saying that this is as honest as my preview can get for the MIP experience. I just want everybody to be prepared that if they go into this type of experience, that they're going to build strong relationships with other members of the church. They're going to gain a better understanding of who God is. They're going to learn how to be flexible, and they might even learn a little bit, gain some clarity about their future. Thank you.
Well, Wesley has made it very clear I need to do a better job of orienting people, I guess. Thanks to both of you for what you've shared, and what I love every time we do an MIP chapel is how the stories are so different, because the experiences are so different. I just want to close with another Henry Nouwen quote and a few little commercial messages about MIP. One of the other things Nouwen said is this: Christian leadership is a dead-end street when nothing new is expected, when everything sounds familiar, and when ministry has regressed to the level of routine. And I think what these stories tell us is that in an MIP internship, nothing is familiar, ministry is not routine, and new things are expected, and that is part of how we learn and grow. So I cannot guarantee you where you will go and what you will do, but if you have any interest or feel any tug in your heart that this might be something your summer would be a good match for you this summer, please come see me after chapel, or if you're running to a class, email me. There's a link on the, if you go to the Bible Department page, you will find a link to MIP, you'll find an online application, and we also will have people at the doors as you leave with some brochures. Two important things to know. One is you do not need to be a Mennonite to do MIP. The M does not stand for Mennonite. Also, you do not need to be a Bible major or double major or minor. We have worked with people in other departments. As long as you have some interest in exploring how your gifts might intertwine with the work of the broader church, then we're interested in talking to you. And you can earn up to $2,000 doing this that gets applied to your fall tuition, so that's a win-win situation. So thank you for your attention, for being here, and I think we have Friday announcements.